Hello, welcome to Roots Runners Rhizomes, Health and Healing from the Underground. I'm Sarah Faulkner.
And I'm Lauren Jambroni.
This show is dedicated to exploring healing and wellness from a liberatory perspective, critiquing top-down systems and institutions.
Instead, we look up and around from below and alongside, the way roots and rhizomes grow.
Our show has not been evaluated by the FDA or any official licensing body, and our intention is not to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease on air.
By providing discussion, critique, and information from a variety of viewpoints, we hope you'll feel more empowered, informed, and resourced as you explore your own options for self-care and working with different practitioners and providers.
Hello. So today we're going to be speaking with Frank Raymond Cetera, co-founder and current board president of the Alchemical Nursery. Frank, are you there? Can you hear me?
I'm here. Yes, I can.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, Frank.
That's Lauren.
Hi, thanks.
So today, folks, we have Frank on the show. We're going to talk to him about the Alchemical Nursery and Frank's engagement with permaculture, and also some specific questions about a project that's very interesting, one of their new projects, which is the Rama Free Clinic Forest Garden. Rama Free Health Clinic Edible Forest Garden. And this is in Syracuse, New York. And the Rama Free Clinic, it's my understanding, Rama means mercy in Arabic, and it's a project of the Muslim American Care and Compassion Alliance. And so that's the clinic, but we're talking with Frank today specifically about the edible food forest. So welcome to the show, Frank.
Well, thanks for having me.
Frank, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Are you originally from Syracuse?
No, I'm originally from near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
And I came to Syracuse for graduate studies at SUNY ESF, which is the State University of New York College of Environmental Science and Forestry.
Awesome. And how long have you been involved with the Alchemical Nursery?
We started the organization in the fall of 2007, just unincorporated at that time, and then in 2008 we went ahead and did the incorporation and the 501c3 status, and so it's going on four plus full years now.
Mm-hmm.
Of sort of startup and revving up to get where we're at.
And can you talk to us a little bit about the Rama Free Clinic project is just one of your initiatives. Can you tell us kind of the scope of everything that you guys do, the Alchemical Nursery?
Yeah, definitely. We started off with sort of the main mission, if you get down to the core of the organization, is that of creating an urban eco-village.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of recognized from the beginning that this is a project that could take, you know, a lifetime. It's a little bit more difficult than even creating an eco-village in a rural environment because of the existing patchwork that exists in the urban environment with so many different landowners and pieces of land and how they're distributed.
Mm-hmm.
Up and the way that they're laid out. So as we started thinking and moving forward, we figured that to create an eco-village, you have to create, you know, all these sustaining systems that support that eco-village, so the foundations or the pillars of it. And those are, you know, as wide-ranging as anything that we would do in society, you know, from health, as we're going to talk a little bit about today, to the environment, to education, to entertainment, you know, everything that sort of makes up a neighborhood or a community. And so then we started targeting some of our activities and our projects at certain pillars that hold up or support sort of the foundation and the development of this idea of an eco-village in the city. So I know we've been involved in the arts a little bit. We've done a project called Trash Transformer, which is creating art out of discarded objects and waste materials. We've been involved with the environment through our permacultural initiatives and education and work that we're doing there. From the economic perspective or from the economic pillar, we've had a fiscal sponsorship project within our organization, and where we sort of act as the sponsoring agency for other projects that need a hand to get themselves started. That's a really interesting, just sort of a side note on that is, when we talk to people and we hear all the different ideas they have for projects, it makes me think back to when we were forming the Alchemical Nursery and thinking about, you know, oh, there's hundreds of different things we could do, right? And you go back mm-hmm. to that foundation, those foundations ideas, and there's no way that, you know, we could do them all ourselves. So how do we help facilitate others to create and to make things happen? So, you know, the fiscal sponsorship facilitation is one of those ways as well.
Awesome. So you have a very wide-ranging and holistic mission, and I'm guessing that that's very informed by the permaculture mindset. Can you talk a little bit about your own personal engagement with permaculture and how you came to it?
Yeah, sure. It started, let's see, what was the year? 1998 was the year in which I was looking at graduate schools. This is when I had first sort of finished my, a couple years after my undergraduate degree, and I wasn't sure where I was heading as far as career or studies and things like that. And I was very interested in philosophy at the time, but I was also very interested in the environment, but I didn't know how to sort of incorporate that into my future. And so I just, you know, one of those cases where you just serendipitously come across an opportunity, and I came across a graduate program in Slippery Rock, Pennsylvania, which is about an hour north of Pittsburgh. And so it was in my neck of the woods, and I was able to check it out, and it was a Master of Science degree in Sustainable Systems, living and working on a homestead that was based upon permaculture principles, and, you know, taking some classes that incorporated permaculture principles into them, you know, land design and things like that. So it was a really quick trial by fire. You know, I got in there, I started working, and I got involved, and then just over the years since then, you know, reading and educating myself, going back to school for forestry so I could sort of concentrate my personal interests and how forests relate to the permaculture paradigm, and then, you know, actually moving these last couple years into facilitating actual new projects on the ground.
Mm-hmm. And could you, especially for our listeners, I'm sure a lot of folks don't necessarily even know what permaculture is. How would you feel about giving us kind of a little overview definition of the philosophy and principles, and then speak to particularly what inspires you and engages you the most personally?
Permaculture has been around for 20 or 30 years as a concept, in that it was organized in Australia under the work of a gentleman named Bill Mollison. He was a scientist, and he was doing some work in the field, and he was coming to an understanding of how, you know, systems work together. And so he sort of started taking the idea of natural systems and applying them to human landscapes and human systems. Mm-hmm. And so out of that developed a really in-depth textbook that he wrote, and just this movement over time. And permaculture then, you know, takes those, you know, natural systems, so it uses science, you know, mm-hmm. in the true sense of our modern, you know, sciences, and also takes sort of the best practices of sort of native or aboriginal peoples, you know, and cultures. So mm-hmm. lots of people have been doing things in ways that are very relevant to living on this earth in a peaceful manner and in a holistic and sharing manner. And so, you know, incorporating those ideas into this, and then a lot of sort of newer interests that people have related to urban ag, and sort of taking what we have and doing the most with it without being over-consumptious and things like that, and being able to design and care and be self-sufficient for themselves. Really, permaculture is, you know, intended to enable you in that way, sort of a people's science or a people's methodology, in that we don't have to be relying on experts all the time to be able to tell us, you know, what's the best thing to do in certain situations. We're taking the best of what's already out there and teaching each other and using it to facilitate landscapes that are sort of in the image of nature, but at the same time are meant to function for humans, you know, providing mm-hmm. food, fuel, fiber, fodder, and lots of interesting things.
Great. Thanks, and thanks for laying that out for our folks. So now sure. Let's get to talking about the Rama Free Health Clinic Edible Forest Garden that Alchemical Nursery is. It's a co-project between you and the clinic, is that correct?
That's right.
And can you tell us how the project came to be?
Yeah, I guess as another aside, just before that, uh-huh. I'll say that when you look at our name, the Alchemical Nursery, people automatically always ask, you know, where's the nursery? Can I come visit? And, you know, in the first couple years of being a startup nonprofit, when we're focusing on things like education and you know, facilitating resources for other people in the community, we didn't actually have an on-the-ground project to start off, or an on-the-ground location, mm-hmm. And that we were building towards that, you know. And so this really came to be, you know, a really special opportunity for us to sort of make one of those forays into an on-the-ground project. I met one of the women on the board of directors of the Rama Clinic. Mm-hmm. Her name is Magda Bayoumi. Mm-hmm. At a meeting for the Syracuse Peace Council. We're both on the advisory board for that organization here in Syracuse. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about, you know, the clinic and how they have this big sort of side lot that's attached to the clinic, and, you know, they're tired of, you know, they've got to put extra effort into mowing the lawn and keeping up the landscaping and all that goes along with, you know, that sort of situation. All that extra work and energy that's required. And, you know, so I sort of chimed in at that point, and I said, well, you know, here's my thought. I said, why don't we think about, you know, transforming that lot and moving it beyond, you know, the grassy lawn that it is right now with weeds popping up here and there, and think about how we can use that lot to, you know, the advantage of the neighborhood and to the sort of advantage of yourself as a health clinic, and connect the two and broaden the reach of the clinic from inside the doors to outside the doors as well. And she was all for it, and she took the idea to her board, mm-hmm. and they said, absolutely, go for it. And so we've been off and running now for about a year and a half, you know, getting the process sort of organized and committed and funded and so on and so forth, and actually, you know, having plants in the ground.
Awesome. Great. Congratulations.
Yeah.
So, Lauren, did you have a...
Yeah. Frank, I was just curious what an edible forest garden is. Mm-hmm. And then if y'all are in an urban landscape in Syracuse, mm-hmm. what's an edible forest garden on a city street? What does that mean?
Right. Yeah, so an edible forest garden is sort of... one incarnation of, you know, the permaculture principles put into action. You know, you can take permaculture principles and sort of design, you know, the front yard of your house, you know, if you're in an urban lot, for instance, and it could only be, you know, maybe 200 square feet or so, and you would still apply certain permaculture principles like observe and interact, you know, stacked functions, so on and so forth. And then as you keep getting larger in scale, you start moving into other aspects of how permaculture can facilitate a landscape. And so when you get to that forest scale, you've actually got a garden that is, and sort of maybe this is one of the areas that needs to be keyed on, is that forest gardening is not gardening in a forest, but it's gardening in the image of a forest.
Mm.
So we're taking the principles of a forest, like multiple layers. So you've got actually seven layers in a forest. When you look at it from an ecological perspective, you've got the root rhizome layer, right? You've got the ground cover layer. You've got the shrub layer. And then you've got, you know, middle story, understory, overstory, and then the vining or climbing layer. And so when you look at how a forest is actually, you know, ecologically structured, that's what we're looking to do with a forest garden, is to put together the right combination of plants that work the best that they can together in sort of a polyculture, which is another term that maybe folks aren't familiar with, but polyculture is essentially multiple species that are put together to create sort of a single functioning system. And so one example for that is you would plant a tree that is perhaps a heavy feeder of nitrogen. You would maybe plant a shrub that mm-hmm. is from the legume family that would then fix nitrogen into the soil from the air. So that's just one simple example of how that would work. And then in the city, we're really trying to, well, first of all, we're trying to bring this forest garden to maturity in the shorter rather than longer time period. So we're working with mostly dwarf and semi-dwarf trees. We're not looking at including in this forest garden, species that are, nut trees that require many, many years of maturity and get really tall. We're looking at things that people can come harvest by hand as they're walking through. We're kind of calling it the snack garden in a sense, because we want people to be able to walk through, grab a fruit or some berries for a snack instead of going next door and buying, chips and mm-hmm. sugary sodas and things from the corner store.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Do you have any idea how many visitors the clinic receives and how many visitors the forest garden might have passing through?
The clinic hasn't officially opened its doors yet. Mm-hmm. They're still waiting for their state permit paperwork to be finished. They're all set to go, though. The whole building is renovated and cleaned, and they've all got their doctors lined up to start seeing patients. So it's actually at the location, too, of a former doctor's office who was very popular in the neighborhood. So it's at a good location for reaching a wide population. And then our forest garden, we've had pretty good turnout with the number of volunteers and people who have come out for our work day so far. We've had upwards of 35 people on a single work day come out to join us. And then the site is, like I said, it's located in such a prominent street and corner of the neighborhood there that, people have been using it to walk through and just as a part of their route, from mm-hmm. from block A to block B. And so we expect to see lots of that continue and having folks come through whenever the fruits and berries start to run and be on the trees. So and educating about that, too, because, one of the sort of fortuitous things about this site is there were a couple serviceberry trees, or Juneberry trees, as some people might know, already on site. Mm-hmm. And they're mature size, and they're actually producing fruit, but I don't think people realize that they're edible fruit. So
right.
part of the work is not just, planting the trees there, but also doing some education about, this tree here, you can't eat the, you can eat the berries from that.
And it's been here all along.
It's been here all along.
Yeah. That's awesome. And for folks who might be interested, because you guys are up in Syracuse, and maybe some of our listeners, including myself, will be able to come and visit, but for folks maybe who are interested in starting their own local forest garden, could you speak for a couple minutes about, I think maybe the most famous edible forest garden people are hearing about lately is the one in Seattle, which, as I understand, has a much larger budget than what you guys had. Can you talk a little bit about, you guys did some interesting funding there with Indiegogo.com, is that correct? You want to talk a little bit about kind of how you pulled that together? And it took a year and a half, right, is what you said, basically, for the project.
Yeah, to get where we are right now. So, the project in Seattle is getting a lot of press right now, and they are receiving lots of funding from the city. I mean, they've got a large population there who's sort of demanding it, so and they obviously have the ability to make it happen, so they're doing so. But we want to make sure that people understand that it doesn't take all that funding to get something like this started. And we're not the only ones doing this by any stretch of the imagination. There's lots of small forest gardens that are starting to pop up throughout the world. So, that's exciting to see as well. When we started Alchemical, we decided to become a form of 501c3. And this is one of the reasons, because we wanted to be able to raise funds in a tax-deductible way and receive donations and apply for grants and things along those lines. So we use that ability, and sort of some of our success in the first couple of years of being an organization of sort of building up awareness of who we are and what we do and the people who are involved with us. And yeah, we launched an Indiegogo campaign, which is an online fundraising site where you sort of lay out your project and you use the site to, you know, send updates and post videos and post pictures and everything, get the people excited and ask for donations. And then in exchange for donations, some kind of perk that you have to provide to whoever is, you don't have to provide it, but, you know, it encourages donations. So, for example, one of our perks at our default funding level of $20 was you would receive a seed pack with sort of a polyculture mix of seeds within for an annuals bed. And, you know, a higher level of donations, so let's see, at the $60 level, the perk was a signed copy of the design drawing of the forest garden by the designer. And then we went even higher, and we had two donations at the $100 level, which was awesome. We actually had a lot of donations for Indiegogo. I think it was around 57.
That's great.
And they were all lower on the tier of the amount that was available. But at the $100 level, we offered free design services to go to somebody's home and create and design a tree polyculture for them as well.
Oh, that's great. That's great. What were you going to say?
Well, just we also did apply for a local grant program to help with funding as well, and we were able to receive that on top of the Indiegogo funds.
Excellent. And how is the city of Syracuse, because the Seattle project, of course, receives a lot of support, both economic and sort of popularly. Mm-hmm. How is it received? How is your project received by the city at large?
Well, there's not been anything negative, which is nice, you know.
Yeah, because in New York City, some of the urban forest and garden farm projects have received some negativity for it. So that is good that you have not.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, there is interest in Syracuse, and there is activity. A lot of it surrounding community gardens, sort of your more traditional sort of, you know, annuals, raised bed style. Shared lot community gardening, and so there are a number of those projects that are off and running. We also have a good sort of mandate that's taking place right now called Save the Rain, which is meant to alleviate, you know, our combined sewer overflow problems, and so there's a lot of tree planting also taking place in Syracuse. We've actually seen an increased percentage of tree canopy cover over the recent years, so that sort of movement is going in the right direction. I'm not seeing a lot of sort of this planting of food-producing species that could be a part of those other initiatives that the city and that the municipalities are undertaking. So hoping that this will be, you know, one of those visions that can contribute to maybe a change in the city's outlook in the future, and when they decide, you know, okay, it's time to make something happen on one of these plots of land that we're holding, or you know, because we have got the money to do tree planting for our Save the Rain initiatives, that maybe we make an effort to be more cognizant of the food production that we include in such a plan.
Excellent. So I think we're winding down the show today. We've really enjoyed talking to you, Frank. How can our listeners and folks find out more and possibly go visit you?
Absolutely. We would direct people first to our website, which is alchemicalnursery.org.
Mm-hmm.
Alchemical with one L, like in alchemy. And we're also on Facebook. And then lastly, we are soon going to be moving into an urban property that's an old vacant house that's being renovated. We're going to actually have a demonstration site there as well, with our office located in that house, and that's going to be on the near west side of Atisco. So other than that, you know, email, you can send a message to info@alchemicalnursery.org, or even call 315-308-1000. 1372. Lots of ways to find us.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Frank. It's
yeah,
so exciting.
Thank you, Frank.
Congratulations. This project's really awesome. Thanks for being on the show with us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Great.
Good. And that's alchemicalnursery.org.
Great.
That's right.
All right, everybody. So that's all the time we have for today. Our next show will air, as always, the third Monday of the month at 3 p.m. So that's June 18th.
And as always, we'd love to hear from you for our future shows. So if you have any ideas for shows or things that you'd like us to be talking about, you can email us at rootsrunnersrhizomes@gmail.com or find us on Facebook.
Awesome. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Take care.
This is At the Row.